Hello, humans of triathlon, and welcome to the HOT Podcast, where we bring you the ordinary but extraordinary world of triathlon, one human, one story at a time, with the aim to inspire and to celebrate this life-changing sport and its humans. Through real, authentic, raw, and enjoyable conversations with triathletes from all around the globe and from all walks of life. I'm Swapnil Chauhan here with my co-host Charles Hunk and Radmom Robin, along with an amazing guest.
Today's HOT podcast guest is relatively new to the sport of triathlon, only doing her first race a few short years ago. However, she has already qualified for and competed in the 70.3 World Championships. But that is not what makes her story amazing. Despite all of the physical feats she has accomplished, her greatest victory has been within herself. A veteran of the Australian Armed Forces, her tours of duty, especially in the intense combat environment of Iraq, left invisible yet lasting scars. She has wrestled with the demons of depression, anxiety, and PTSD. And with the help of the sports of cycling and triathlon, she has come out the other side with lasting insights into the importance of living right here in the moment. Now, as she sets her sights on her first full Ironman, she's here to share with us a message of resiliency and healing through the sport of triathlon that we all love. Please welcome to the HOT Podcast, Sarah Watson.
Hi, Sarah.
Hi, Sarah. Hi, how are you?
Hi, welcome.
Thank you.
Yeah, you sent through your story to me a few days ago, and you know, it's just another inspiring example of how the sport has given someone the strength in their lives to be able to fight the good fight, you know. So we're just excited to learn more about you and your journey and be able to share that with everyone listening.
Okay, great.
To start things off, how about you take us back to your childhood and schooling years? Tell us where and how you were raised. I know you were into sports, so which ones in particular, and what do you love about them? And, you know, just your path till joining
them. Sure. Yeah, well, I grew up in a country town in New South Wales in Australia, a little town called Yass. And back in the 80s, when I was living there, there wasn't too much to do other than sport, so or outside school. So my mum and dad were pretty supportive of enrolling us, or myself especially, in the swimming club. And summer was pretty much spent at the outdoor 50 meter pool in Yass. And from the age of about 10, I started the swimming squad and, formed good friendships there. And we had these little competitions called the Shine Shields. And so my competing, you know, at a very, very low level as a young kid started back then, and got the taste for, you know, racing and competing and trying the best I could do in a race sort of setting. So yeah, I guess I've been involved in sport my whole childhood, because as a country girl, that was one of the only things to entertain us. So I'm really grateful for that, actually. So from squad, I met other kids who were doing other sports, and I got into gymnastics and did a bit of gymnastics competing, and that's also gave me a bit of awareness about how the body works, which is always a good thing, and how to look after injuries and things like that. So all that stuff is good foundation building for, you know, growing up through my teens. And now it served me well, I think, too, just understanding how the body works, which is good. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Went through schooling in Yass, and then at the end of year 10, which is our high school, it ended. So I moved across to the Big Smoke, across to Canberra, to a school called Darramullen College, which also had a lot of emphasis on the sport. So I got into, also alongside my academics, continued in the sporting arena, started playing team sports more, I guess. But which then served me well in working in a team, I guess, as well as individual sporting feats. And being in Canberra, it's quite a large population of defence and defence families. And my father, who was an accountant, and very much liked the idea of not having to pay for my university, strongly encouraged me to enrol in try out to get into the Australian Defence Force Academy based in Canberra, which is Australia's military university, where it basically trains young men and women to become officers in the Australian military, Air Force, Army and Navy. Yeah. So that's what I did when I turned 18. I got selected into the Army and at age 18 marched off into the military and started a long career in the military.
So was it just because your dad told you, or was it something appealing to you as well?
Look, I knew nothing about the military, to be honest. I didn't grow up. I grew up with a brother who was obsessed with Rambo and commando movies and stuff. So yeah, that was about my only exposure to the military.
I'm sure that was totally realistic, right?
Well, I think that's where I got my ability to run, because he used to chase me around the paddock with his weapons, in inverted commas. So yeah,
you got fast, quick.
Yeah, I was his enemy and I was being hunted, so I learned how to run. Yep, pretty much.
So what's your specialty in the armed forces?
So for 4 years, we were all cadets, officer cadets, and I studied politics and history as my university degree, and then for the final year of training, we focus on infantry, tactics. We all get trained in the same manner, men and women, to be able to lead a group in war, I guess, in a war setting. But back when I was doing my training, females were limited to a number of corps, as in body units, and one of the things I was interested in was the intelligence field. So I managed to be selected to enter into the intelligence corps, and that's where I spent my career as an intelligence officer in the Army. Yeah.
So what did that role entail exactly?
I guess many people have seen the James Bond films, I guess, and well, it's not that sexy, to be fair, but it was our role is to support the battle, I guess, support the commander in a war environment, to understand what the enemy is going to do and how we can position in order to have a best outcome, I guess. So I guess it involved a lot of analysis, a lot of understanding tactics, understanding lots of technologies and how to utilize that in order to gain the advantage and allow our guys the upper hand, I guess. And so we underwent a lot of training to be able to learn how to be competent and useful in that environment, which I can't obviously go into too much detail about that.
Right.
But yeah, it was a supporting role for our combat guys, but often the intelligent is so critical in a setting, particularly a warlike setting, because without the knowledge, you don't know what your plan is going to be, and you obviously want to protect your people as much as possible too. So commanders in a modern battlefield really relied on the intelligence picture to be able to, do their jobs. And yeah.
So what was that whole environment like? Talk to us a little bit about that. How intense was it? Like, what was a typical day like?
It depends very much on the mission. If we were focused, I guess I can speak mainly from I was posted to Iraq to support our combat guys in Iraq back in 2006-2007. And I guess we had long days of, we had to be on pretty much 24/7 in order to try and take the initiative or retain the initiative in order to keep our guys informed of what the battle space looked like and how quickly it was changing. So, yeah, the intensity is very high on operations. So, and equally at home, we if we're not deployed and doing our roles, which we're trained for, we're training back home and, you know, updating skills and keeping up with the technologies required and things like that. So, very demanding.
Did you remain involved in sports of any kind during this time? Was that sort of an outlet for you?
Absolutely. Being in the Army in particular, it's a requirement to pass the physical fitness standards. And having had a childhood where I was into sport, that carried through to the Army, and being a female in the military, where during my sort of initial training, I was one of 7% of the Army was female, so had a lot to prove as a girl. And the one way in which I could always sort of feel equal was by being pretty fit and keeping up with the guys in various fitness training and things like this. So I prided myself on my fitness and worked really hard to attain the highest standards in the fitness testing. I also became a combat fitness leader during my time in the military, which just meant that I could run personal the physical training sessions for my unit. So, yeah, I had a real passion for fitness, I guess, and keeping fit was important to me in so that I could, I guess it was my own way in which I compensated for not being a guy, I guess. I don't know. That sounds a bit crazy, but I just felt like there was nothing that I couldn't really do that the guys could do, you know. So
a place to prove yourself, sort of.
Yeah, that constant having to prove that I was pulling my own weight, shall we say, yeah.
And so where did your experiences take you from there?
Well, I was posted all over Australia, had various opportunities abroad to use my skills, became a linguist as well in the military, a French linguist, so did a bit of work with the French military on exercise and, you know, training and things like this. But, yeah, I guess the pinnacle for most people who join the military is to serve on a deployment and serve overseas, do the job that they've been trained to do in an operational environment. So I was super excited to deploy, to be honest, to Iraq and put what I'd learnt over the years to real life, I guess. But yeah, I guess once you're on the ground and you're living it, it's a different thing altogether. So, and everyone reacts differently to combat situation. I guess that's for me something that was quite had a massive impact on my life, that time in Iraq. So.
So you came back from your 7-month service in Iraq, and then that's when you first started PTSD, right? And you took a 12-month leave from the Army, and then you went on to pursue your master's at Deakin.
Yes, that's right.
So why did you feel like that, to pursue your master's, was the next thing to do?
Yeah, I guess I thought.
And but I'm studying at Deakin right now.
Too, wonderful. So yeah. It took me a while to get through my master's degree, by distance. Love Deakin. It was a great university to do it by, and very supportive. But I'd started my master's before I deployed to Iraq. Put it on hold whilst I was there, and I didn't cope too well, to be honest, coming back from my deployment from Iraq, and it kind of started when I was over there. Things were I'd never experienced, I guess it'd been experienced some kind of anxiety, I guess, before, people worry, but I came back with like heightened senses, I guess. I was jumping. I'd become very anxious all the time. I'd started having nightmares. My family, I couldn't really relate. They thought I was just a different person. My brother said, "So what's happened to your sis? Have you got post-traumatic stress or something?" And it wasn't even, I hadn't even thought about that, because I had the screening coming out of Iraq with the psychologist, and I'd sort of voiced some stuff, but not too much. And I said, you know, I wasn't feeling too good, but they said, yeah, that's normal, you'll be fine. And I knew I wasn't fine, but I thought, well, I need to get out of this environment, I need to get out of here before, you know, I didn't want to deal with it. So, yeah, took 2 years leave without pay from the military and completed my master's in international relations. And I did that. I'd met a boy in Iraq. He was serving with the British Army, and he sort of said, hey, come over to UK and hang out and do your master's. And, yeah, we got engaged, and we're now married with two beautiful children. But, yeah, I guess he had a different experience in Iraq, and he's seen me go through what I've been through, and I'm just really lucky he's still here, I guess, because he's living with someone with post-traumatic stress disorder and depression isn't easy, no way. So yeah, it's been a long, tough road, but we're getting there. We're getting there.
But, and you also have some shared kind of experience, like he understands at least the basis of what you're going through.
Yeah, I guess he's now well versed in what it is, what post-traumatic stress disorder is, what it looks like, what are the symptoms. I mean, he's deployed a couple of times as well, you know, he's lost people in his units in a war zone, but you know, do people cope differently? Their resilience, or obviously everyone's resilience levels are different, and it's based on a lot of things, and we're still doing a lot of research into it. But yeah, the good news is that you can always get through stuff. We're quite amazing humans. We have the capacity to heal. And yeah, that's where I guess triathlon has come into it for me. Well, initially it was cycling.
Talk a bit about how you got into the cycling and what it meant for sort of your recovery and your path through this.
Yeah. What happened? Yeah, I had a couple of children, and around that same time, I think, you know, I put a lot of weight, well, not a lot of weight on a mandatory standard amount of weight for someone who, you know, grows a child, I guess. But I'd lost all my fitness, and I had lost a lot of motivation. And when I was pregnant with my second child, my father, who pretty much was my emotional mainstay during the time when I was in denial that there was something wrong with me, I think he always knew, and he was always very sensitive, and I just felt at ease when I was with him, I guess. He was like my soother. And I was pregnant with my second son, and had an 18-month-old toddler, and working full-time in the army. And, yeah, the doctors, I got called to go to the hospital, where the doctors said, your father is terminally ill. He may see Christmas, which was less than 6 months from that point. He may not. So, yeah, that's when my world fell apart, I guess, and everything I'd sort of kept a lid on came flooding out in a big way. So yeah, I became very depressed. My symptoms of post-traumatic stress, you know, amplified, which I hadn't really talked about with anyone, but the nightmares, the anxiety, and I just didn't cope. I just started bawling my eyes out at work, run into the toilets. People just thought, oh, it's just a pregnant lady being a bit crazy with her hormones. But I guess at the end of the day, I identified it and I needed actual help because there was no good days. It was just a constant, everything was just getting worse and worse. So, yeah, I guess it was that point where I was referred on to a psychiatrist and shared with him what I'd been trying to deal with for the previous 6 or so years before. And that's when I started to do the work to start to get better, which involved a lot of, talk therapy at the time because I was pregnant, didn't want to go on medication, even though that's what happened after. I had to go on medication for depression. And so, yeah, and it was also a time I couldn't really use sport and fitness to assuage my symptoms. So, yeah, it was a dark time in my life. My father died 6 weeks before my son was born, which was pretty devastating. But we called him David after my dad, and he's bizarrely, he's got this exact same birthmark my father had on his stomach, exactly the same size, same spot. It's pretty amazing and has got quite a few characteristics of my dad. So in a way I feel like he's still here through my son. Yeah, so, I mean, yeah, and so I was unwell. I was in deep grief once Dad died and, yeah, life was a bit of a mess. So my husband saw a bike ride advertised called The Cure for Cancer, and this was about 12 months after my dad, just short of a year of David, the second boy's first birthday, and he said, maybe you should do that. And that's how I got into cycling. I did the ride to conquer cancer. It's a 200-kilometer ride over 2 days or 3 days. I can't quite remember. It was a while ago, which at the time seemed like absolutely impossible. I really wasn't a cyclist. Had an old bike, but I got into it, and I thought, well, you know what? I'm going to honor my dad. I'm going to do this. Raised the money, about $5,000 towards the Cancer Council, and completed the ride a few months later. So I was hooked after that. Yeah, cycling was my meditation and my release and my medicine at the time. Yeah.
And so how did you work that out? I mean, you've got a lot going on. You've got young kids, your husband's working, you're going through all this stuff. Like, just kind of what did that look like for your family?
Yeah, I mean, my training wasn't intense. I guess it was maybe 2 hours a week. Or 2 or 3 hours a week. I was getting out on the bike, so it was manageable. But it became critical after a while, where I realized how much it was helping me and my mental health. And then, yeah, so it was about a year after that. Not so long after that. I saw something advertised on Facebook for veterans of the military. At that same time, I was being told you're not no longer suitable to remain in the military due to mental health issues. So that was another slap in the face, something I had to then sort of process and deal with. But this opportunity to cycle in the Italian Dolomites came up. So I tried out. I was by far the least competent cyclist, but they saw that I had potential to heal and do a lot of growth, I guess, that the opportunity would help me. And yeah, I guess I was super lucky to get chosen. And over the preceding 6 months, we had a coach, Scott Sunderland, a former professional cyclist for team and a team Sky director, so very lucky to have very good coach who taught me really how to ride the bike and from there, yeah, there was all go. At that time the kids were getting a bit bigger and was able to get a babysitter from time to time to do a bit more training, and so I got into the cycling. In mid-2015, I raced in this, it was called the Trois Étapes with the Soldier On team, with Cadel Evans, was our professional on our team, and Hamish Blake, the comedian who everyone adores, obviously, in Australia. He's one of our most famous Aussies. He also rode. He was not a cyclist whatsoever, but he just an amazing human. He just did the training as well, followed the program and raced with us all, and yeah, just smashed it. So we had a great time, and it was more like, yes, the racing and the cycling and the Dolomites was absolutely incredible. It was tough, but it was incredible. But the camaraderie and the fun and the banter was just like being back in the military, and sort of started to find myself again and realize that there is life outside of pain and grief. So yeah, that experience.
Even took part in the Invictus Games in Toronto, right? I hadn't heard of these games before, but I looked them up and I thought it's such a great initiative. So talk to us a little bit about that experience of yours. Before that, just quickly for our listeners that aren't aware, so the Invictus Games are an international multi-sport event which was created by Prince Harry, in which wounded, injured, and sick armed servicemen participate in various events. So I thought that was pretty cool. Does this happen every year?
It has happened every year since Prince Harry started it in London in 2016, I think.
Mm-hmm. No, 2017.
I went in 2017 last year. I got picked for the team, the Australian team, for cycling, but swimming and also track. Mm-hmm. So a deconstructed triathlon.
All the components.
So I was racing the 1500 meter on track, then the 50 meters backstroke freestyle and breaststroke and 100 meters free. And I also did the cycling criterium and time trial events. So I was pretty busy over the 5 days competing, but man, what an experience. It was amazing. Wearing the green and gold for Australia was like a dream for me. And, you know, I hadn't envisaged it as being someone, as a veteran who was wounded in the line of duty, but oh my God, the people who were competing, the support of, you know, Prince Harry and his beautiful fiance at the time, Meghan Markle, in the crowds there cheering everybody on, and it was just the most incredible experience. And yeah, like I said, I was competing in cycling, running and swimming, so I was doing a lot of training of last year of the three sports. So I thought, you know what, I might as well try a triathlon. Because I'd heard, so, and my husband Paul had been had started doing triathlons and half Ironmans, and I said, do you think I could do it? Do you think I could make the distance and training so much? And he sort of said, yeah, do it, try it. You know, what's the worst that can happen? You don't finish. But yeah, that's never been an option in my personality. I guess it's my own rigid. If I rigid for something, I'm gonna, you know, get my money's worth. So yeah, I registered for my first half Ironman in Barcelona last year in 2017 in May. Invictus Games was in September, so I knew I'd have time to recover before competing in the Invictus Games. So that's what I did. Yeah, and I loved it. Loved it. The atmosphere, the general vibe. It was just so uplifting. And yeah, I guess I'm hooked now.
And you qualified for the World Championships that in?
I did. It was.
Did you race?
A bit cheeky. I did. I went along to Chattanooga last year and raced in my age group, and again, just an incredible experience. And yeah, now I've got the appetite and the hunger for it. So yeah,
now that's, you're going up
now. My dream. Point. Yeah, my dream is now to make it to Kona one day. So that's my goal. That's my next goal. But I respect the sport. I've got to understand that it's, you know, it's a long journey, and people, you know, you've got to commit a lot to it. And I'm in that thick of it at the moment. It's 3 weeks out from my first Ironman, full Ironman. So yes, it's exciting.
So talk a little bit about how do you work it all out? You've got a family, you know, relationship, marriage, kids? How does that all fit together for you? Because that's a big challenge in anybody's life.
Yeah, it is. And it's a little bit challenging at the moment. My husband is serving full-time still in the army. Got two small kids. It's not easy. I can guarantee that. And, you know, we were working really hard on our marriage and achieving both our goals. Paul is, my husband's qualified for the 70.3 World Champs as well. So he's competing in South Africa this year. So he's got his own training. So it's a lot of compromise, and it's a lot of early mornings, late nights on the on the trainer, on the kicker. But it's an outlet for us both, and it's something that's united us as well. So it is hard. We drag the poor children along to the races, and they get put in the iron kids and told to run. And we don't ever make them do anything they don't want to do. But yeah,
they should have like a Sherpa training camp for kids. So by the time they're teenagers, they're like, they know the whole drill.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. They'll know all the rules and what needs to go to the transition areas. And it's kind of like our family thing now. So if we think of, we're going to go on a holiday, maybe one of us will register for an event there. And we've got a Land Rover Defender with a Hannibal roof tent. So, you know,
I saw that. That looks so cool.
Yeah, and it's a bit of an affordable way for the four of us to get around and have a bit of – the boys absolutely love it. They love camping. And, yeah, so it's a way we can do it as a family and keep them interested as well. Yeah.
Well, one thing I like to ask when people are, you know, because triathletes are coming from around the world, what is one of the best things and the worst things about training where you live right now?
Undoubtedly, my husband, we posted in France. It's all a bit of a joke, really. My husband was in the British Army. He transferred to the Australian Army and now is working in France for the Australian Army. So we found ourselves over here because of his role in the Army. He works with helicopters. He's an engineer. And he we've been in the south of France, tough gig, I know, for the last 18 months. and the cycling is just, it's just incredible. Like I can't, it's so beautiful where we are. And the scenery and, you know, it's a national sport, cycling, Tour de France and everything like that. So I feel safe on the roads. I very rarely find myself on my kicker on the indoor trainer. If I've got a cycling session, I have to get out and just find a new place to explore. So that's the best thing I've found about this triathlon journey, the cycling in the south of France. The worst thing, I don't know. I guess it's the balance, trying to balance being a mum and a wife and training for an endurance event. It's very tricky to balance it all. And also, you know, make sure keeping healthy mentally as well. And not trying to overshoot anything, you know, not trying to put too much expectation on myself or my husband or my kids. You know, you got to kind of keep it real. And
that's always going to. After going through everything that you have, does everything else, including triathlon, does it feel, I don't want to say less important, but like, are you able to put the little things into perspective a lot more easily now, if that makes sense?
Yeah, I think so. I think, you know, just feel really lucky. Feel really lucky that I've got my physical health. I'm able to do what I can do as I'm getting older as well. And having done 18 years in the army, which is pretty hardcore on your body, I'm just really grateful to have my health. So anytime I even complete a training session, I give myself a high five, you know, good work. you've got to kind of remember it's about the journey as well, not necessarily just running across the finish line. Although I've been, you know, that in itself is an amazing feeling, the accomplishment of training for an event and then completing it and feeling that sense of achievement. But yeah, I guess life is happening while we're sort of not noticing it. So got to try and make sure we are in the moment, in the present moment, and appreciating it for what it is. Instead of, I think my biggest thing that I noticed, I've had to work on, I guess, is being here and now. Because when I was deep in depression, I was, you know, grieving what I'd lost. And when I was deep in my anxiety stage, I'd be worrying about what's going to happen next or what's going to happen in the future. And neither of those times had served me. So, yeah, it's a lot of training myself now to just be present and grateful for what's going on today.
Well, that's a great takeaway for all of us.
Yeah.
I was learning more about the intelligence score as well and watching some videos yesterday. And in those, they were saying that the people who usually like to look at the bigger picture or the whole picture join that group. So firstly, are you like that as well? And if so, what does that look like when you're training for triathlon? How do you translate that nature of yours into triathlon?
Yeah, you're right. You've got to have a broad perspective of what you're looking at, especially, you know, in that role. So maybe that's something I subconsciously developed during my time. Having a coach now, I've never had a coach personally, but I've taken on a coach who helps me understand the sport as a whole, not just the training. It's also about the recovery and nutrition and keeping a perspective, a whole life balance as well. Otherwise it becomes an obsession. And so that's been also very helpful, having a coach to keep that perspective real and broad. I guess for me especially, because I was a bit of like, right, I'm just going to run myself ragged until, I don't know. I didn't really understand the way in which you can improve as an athlete by looking at the bigger picture. And that's where that professional sort of coaching has helped me. Yeah.
You touched on the camaraderie that you experienced when you were cycling. So, and you know, there must have been this amazing bond between everyone in the army as well. So how does that relate to the community you see and experience in triathlon?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I've only done three triathlons in the last year, or three and a half Ironmans. And each one I've made friends and, like, you know, have now in touch, you know, and talking and exchanging, you know, tips and things like this. And everyone's just so encouraging, and it's just the most incredible thing to be a part of. And that's what I've been missing, I think, since being out of the army, is that camaraderie and that belonging to something bigger. And definitely find that triathlon and the triathlon community provides that. And I never used to listen to podcasts, and I wasn't really on Instagram until I started triathlon. And now, like, any spare time or when I'm training, I'll be listening to, you know, podcasts, learning about other people's story and what, you know, what they advise and things like this. So people are just so willing to share, and that's what's really nice about it. That's, you feel a part of something really good and positive.
Well, I really like how you used your Instagram to bring a lot of awareness to the issues you've been talking about. And so tell us a little bit about the ride you just did, the Kooi. Is that, am I saying it right?
Yeah, that's right. Kooi.
And what the kind of theme of that was, and what your intent was with that.
Yeah, well, it basically was a ride to raise awareness and some money towards supporting the ex-serving community, who there is a big problem of mental health, post-traumatic stress and depression, and the rates of suicide in our ex-serving community. It's across the world now. In America, it's particularly bad, the rates of suicide. So I lost a friend I served with in November to suicide. He took his own life, two young kids. And, I felt I had to act. I felt like I had to do something, because I had been there. I had been in that very dark place where the option of not being here anymore was appealing. And I feel it's an obligation I have now that I need to share that it's possible to get through that. It's possible to push through the pain where you think there's no alternative. And so this is what the Kui ride was about. Kui is a thing that I don't know 100% if it's this is fact, but it's what the soldiers, Australian soldiers and farmers use back in Australia to try and, because distances are so great in Australia and we might be spread across a large area and you'd call out Kui to try and find out where your mates were. And so, yeah, the idea was to yell out Kui, anyone else hurting, you know, it's okay, you're not alone. And so, yeah, that was the ride. My husband and I and another guy, Paul, my husband works with in the Australian Army, we rode from where we live in south of France up to Alpe d'Huez over 3 days. And, yeah, just concurrently Aussie farmer who was quite moved about the plight of the situation for veterans also did a ride across Australia. So we did it sort of in conjunction. When I go back to Australia at the end of this year, I hope to do it with him and try and get Hamish Blake along and Cadell maybe, and, you know, get a whole bunch of people who anyone who's interested or touched by suicide, mental health issues, to get out on their bike and you know, go along with your mates and know that you're not alone. Yeah, so that's the passion and the reason behind the Kui ride, what I did recently.
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah.
Well, I would definitely urge anybody listening to check out your Instagram, the photos you've posted, and just the statistics of how many people are lost for every person lost in battle is kind of surprising.
Yeah, it's not really something that people think about or are aware of, because, you know, there's a lot of war movies that celebrate war heroes. It's becoming more talked about, I guess, the fact that people bring a lot home, and then what do you do with these people who are in so much pain and hurting from, you know, the mental wounds they've got? And it's something that our governments really need to address, because it's not getting better. It's only getting worse. So, yeah, if I can raise some awareness about the problem and, you know, reach those who feel they're alone and there is no, they've got no one to turn to, then, yeah, I'll be always passionate about this. So, yeah.
So when you are having a sort of bad day or struggling with your mind, outside of triathlon, is there anything else you do to find composure? Do you meditate at all? Or I think you're into yoga.
Yes, I did my yoga teacher trainer as well soon after my father died, but it was specifically a trauma-sensitive yoga I was interested in, and I started teaching that to other veterans before we moved to France. And the results were compelling. People started to have less symptoms because they were learning how to be able to be in tune with their body. So the body does store the body stores trauma, not just our minds. So to be able to work through that trauma in our bodies, you know, in gentle movement and things like this is also very healing and useful. And, you know, obviously for triathletes, doing a bit of stretching and yoga and mindfulness is always going to be beneficial physically as well.
Yeah.
Other than that, yeah, I think just the cycling I find very meditative. Just being completely focused on the task is really, yeah, it's mindfulness, it's being present. So I keep going on about it to my friends. I want everyone, because it's just so amazing.
Yeah, bike's like being a big kid again.
Yeah,
in a way,
exactly. And but yeah, it's so freeing, and what you see when you're out on the bike, it just, yeah, you can't replicate that.
So, do you have little bikes for your kids yet?
we do. So, our plan next year is to move back to Australia near Canberra. We've got a property. My husband wants to set up mountain biking skills park, so that, you know, people from around the area can to bring out their bikes or hire a bike and get on their bike, basically. And I also like to get into a bit of coaching, triathlon coaching one day as I get older, and get the kids involved if they want to. Never ever would put pressure on anyone to, or especially our kids, to do something they didn't want to do. But yeah, hopefully they'll want to do it. But yeah, that's the plan.
I wanted to bring attention to a particular sentence you wrote in your email to me. You said, "I have faced many battles in my life, but none greater than with myself." And I think that's just such a powerful statement coming from someone who's experienced real battle situations. So could you just elaborate on that statement a little more?
Yeah. Well, I guess it goes back to when I came out of Iraq and the fact that I knew there was something not right, but I didn't want to admit it. And so it's this kind of, and we're all probably guilty of it to a degree, trying to soldier on without dealing with things that are bothering us, which can become bigger than Ben-Hur, for which it did for me, which became like it developed into mental illness. So I didn't deal with my problem at the time because I was afraid of judgment, you know, all these things. And yeah, if I'd dealt with it back then, my life may have taken a different course, but at the same time, I never regret anything because I've had to grow, I've had to come out of it, I've had to work on my problems consciously. But having said that, I still are pretty, like, you know, friends tell me I'm pretty hard on myself because I have such high expectations now to be able to do things and achieve things, because you know, we sort of want the best for ourselves, we want to realize our potential, but it's the balance of knowing that, you know, you can't beat yourself up every day if you're not meeting what you think is expected. And yeah, having more realistic expectations of yourself is critical as well. So I guess that's what I meant by that. I guess I firstly didn't look after myself. I didn't seek the help I needed at the start of it all, and try to deal with stuff that I wasn't capable of dealing with on my own. And then from there, I guess now is trying to keep it real and keep the perspective of training for events as a journey and completing the event as part of that journey and the continuum on the journey. So being kind to ourselves and not getting too down in the dumps if mm-hmm. our goals aren't always met.
Yeah, it reminds me of this little saying that if you conquer the enemy within, the enemy outside can do no harm. So exactly, I think that would be one of my top takeaways from this, at least.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, yeah. We need to be kind to ourselves and realize that we need to nurture ourselves, and that's where we're going to realize our full potential, when we're kind to ourselves and we are our own best friend, I guess.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, that and that great reminder to be living in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think that. Absolutely.
All right. Yeah. And as we wrap things up, are there any people you'd like to give a shout out to here?
Well, firstly, my husband. Thank you so much for supporting me, Paul, for my newfound passion of triathlon. And you guys, thank you for reaching out. I really appreciate what you do as well, sharing stories of amazing humans, not just the pros, who I adore as well. I think that, you know, we need these people who are at the top of their game to aspire to. Yep. But hearing other stories of people who are out there is just great.
Yeah, and where can everyone find you online?
My Instagram is, I think it's SarahWatson78. It's very original. It's just my name. Turning 40 at the same time Kona's on. So, you know, dreams can come true, maybe. 40th anniversary. Who knows? Yeah, that's me.
You'll get there. All right, our last question. Why do you try?
To realize my potential. And, yeah, it's just a wonderful sport to be involved in.
Sure is. All right, Sarah, it was a real pleasure having you on. Thank you for taking the time. Really appreciate it.
No worries. Oh, thank you. Thanks very much. I'm looking forward to listening. I'm going to listen to all your podcasts now in the next few days.
Thank you.
But thank you. Good on you for doing what you do.
Amazing guest. Yeah, we've had a lot of amazing guests. I keep being just astounded by the stories.
Exactly. And the crazy part is we've just gone into like 6-7 guests till now. So there's so many people out there.
Oh, no, you'll be inundated, I imagine, with so many amazing people. Exactly. I mean, I'm like, oh, I know this person who'd be great for your story. And like I said, I've got a friend who I was on a 6-week PTSD course in a mental hospital, and he literally was a walking heart attack, and he's just done his first Ironman this year. Like, he was nearly 200 kilos, and
we have to get him on, so just send over the details.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, yeah, he was an army guy too, and he saw way worse stuff than me, but yeah, good guy. But thank you.
For sure.
Oh, this was great. Thank you so much for sharing your experience.
No worries. Thank you.
Awesome. Yeah. All right.
Well, see you later, Sarah. Or talk to you later.
See you later. Okay. Have a good day.
Maybe someday I'll come right across Australia.
Oh, yes. Yes, you must.
All right.
Okay.
Bye.
See you. Bye.
Thanks a ton for listening, everyone. Head on over to our Instagram post at Humans of Triathlon and let us and Sarah know how you liked the episode. Also, make sure to subscribe to the podcast if you haven't already, and would mean so much to us if you could leave us a review in iTunes if you're liking these guest stories and interviews we've been bringing you. And this week's Hot Podcast shout-out goes to Libby Dykes, aka @iron_tika on Instagram. For anyone that knows or follows Libby, you know that she's just this fun-loving, positive, and supportive person in the TriFam. And she just completed her first full Ironman at Boulder a couple weeks ago. She had a challenging day out there, but pushed through and crossed that finish line. And honestly, I had no doubt that she would. So big congrats on becoming an Ironman, Libby. And thanks a lot for your iTunes review. Very much appreciate that. All right, everyone, we'll be back next week with another amazing guest and story. Hope you all have an amazing week. Until next time, keep trying.